It's time for She Says Art and He Says Science, your weekly hour of edutainment as you learn about the creative interaction between artists and scientists. With your host, Jill Dittmeyer, curious journalist and arts enthusiast, and Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit. Now it's time for She Says Art and He Says Science.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, curious journalist and arts enthusiast.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations.
And we are doing that today. We are talking about the art and science of teaching art and collaborating art. Mark, why don't you introduce our guests and let us know a little bit more about today's conversation?
Sure. Please welcome Greg Hall, Interim Dean of the Heron School of Art and Design at IUPUI, and the Valerie Eichmeyer Professor in Sculpture. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Hi, Greg. Good to have you here.
And we also have Anila Aga, an Associate Professor of Drawing at Heron School of Art and Design, who is also an internationally known artist. Welcome.
Welcome, Anila. Good to have you with us.
I'm delighted to be with you guys. Thank you.
Great. So obviously we wanted to record this with you all back in March. In fact, we were ready to do that. And we have had a few things in the world happen in March 2020 till now. So now we're in July. And so I think that should be a little bit of part of our conversation as well, as how has that affected both of you?
And also the change in technology. Our listeners, yeah, we are actually recording this via Zoom instead of being in the WICR studios as well. So we are making adjustments every day along with everybody else. And obviously, Greg and Anila, that was a major thing for you and your classes when the COVID pandemic really shut everything down back in March of 2020.
Yes, I thought we had been really engaged and fully immersed in technology, and then realized we had a lot to learn, and so we did. And we were pioneers, I feel like, in Zoom, and now it's just a part of our everyday practice. But it's been an interesting process. It's allowed us to venture into some new territories and to do more than just sort of create a stopgap or a band-aid. We found things that will carry forward. We found best practices we'd like to continue to use as we move forward as a result of having to find a way to navigate this. So looking forward to the fall and getting to apply what we've learned from the spring. Maybe the biggest challenge of the spring was how quickly we had to transition to fully online just to keep everyone safe. But it was remarkable to watch how all in everyone was, faculty, staff, and students, to making that work. I'm still so impressed by the whole team that happened all over the country as well, and not just in schools, everywhere.
Yeah, I've been impressed, Greg, by not only IUPUI's technology and the way they were able to ramp that to scale at an unprecedented rate, really. They have had that background, but they've never had that kind of use, and kind of paralleled along with Zoom, who's gone through all kinds of hoops trying to figure out how, but they've gotten pretty good at not, having what we call Zoom bombing and other things happen. They've given us some really nice tools, and it's very stable. So that allows us to do this show.
Well, I did a couple of meetings on WebEx as well as on another system, and it didn't work so well. Zoom seems to work the best so far. I don't know if that's true, but for me, it's worked better.
Yeah, I think it was designed around around a platform that allowed for this type of sharing versus the other ones were more business oriented, where you were like teleconferencing and it wasn't not for simultaneous conversations. So Zoom's really, as a teaching tool, I think has been really great. What's your experience, Anila, as a teacher using Zoom?
Because it was the middle of the semester and then the students were sort of like, isolated at their homes, some students had to still go to work. So I think out of a class of 20, I lost about 7 students who wouldn't show up at all. So that was one of the casualties, I would say, of the Zoom situation. or, you know, online situation, because, you know, the I think partly it was that students may have felt that they weren't getting what they paid for, you know, because suddenly we've gone off online. You know, the contact is so important in an art environment. And I think that was something that took them down, sort of like a little sort of sad maybe. But overall, the experience was pretty good considering that we had to do it really fast. And, you know, like 1 week we were coming back to school and then we hear that it's gonna go online. And I think for the first 2 weeks, I was thrilled to bits that, you know, I don't have to get up. I don't have to go into drive and deal with the traffic and parking at IUP. <I know. laughs> But then after in the third week, I realized it's a lot harder than I had imagined. You know, teaching art online can be difficult. I mean, I think art history or art appreciation is sort of different. You kind of show them images and stuff, but when you're trying to demonstrate, you have to have the video ready, you know, and we had no time to do that. So, and then how do you set it up? Because I would have had to use my cell phone or my computer to do that. And so all those things were kind of something that we would have to plan a little in advance to make it work 100%.
And that's what I wanted to ask you guys about. Was Heron doing any online teaching before COVID? And if so, what was it? And then how did you use that as maybe a model to shift and expand for after COVID?
So we had a few fully online classes, but the vast majority were face-to-face. But most classes had been using a learning management tool that was based online. We use a tool called Canvas. So there was a component of the class that was happening that way, but it was very synchronous. We met face-to-face at a regular time. And I think we learned that you know, everyone's lives became complicated, but I think we've come to realize that everyone's lives were complicated before this. And so being able to provide that content, those recorded demos, even though there wasn't time last semester, there will be for the coming semester. Making more of that content available online allows students, if they miss something, they're able to get that information back, or if they need a refresher. And I think a big change in education has been a greater effort to meet the students where they are and to be flexible. And this seems like the moment has forced us to do that more effectively. It's necessary, it's essential, but it's also, I think, the right pedagogical approach to work with the students, to gauge them. You know, I'm less concerned about attendance than I am in performance. I want to see what they make and I want to evaluate that. And so this gives us the means to do that in a way that is at least sympathetic to what everyone's dealing with in their own homes in terms of work or family members or whatever they're navigating.
I think, Greg, that particularly at a school like IUPUI, where you have a large student body that doesn't live on campus, that have to work. I mean, that's part of the thing to be able to go through school, have lots of other kinds of things that I think you're right. I think the educational outcomes of this have been positive for that, that you do your work when you can, you're not fixed to a classroom, but then you have a way to share it.
Yeah, Zoom was one way to build a community, but there are other technologies we're using. I think increasingly we're building this educational community where the classes also happen rather than the other way around. We're not just building online classes and having students just come there. We're trying to build a community the same way we would have in person. And I think tools like Slack and other vehicles that allow those conversations to happen on the side have given us a way to do what we used to do in person in a fairly effective way. I think that enhances the education. Sorry, Nina.
I do think that we are going to face some challenges teaching in the 3D areas because we need equipment and the students may not have the equipment they need. And so I wonder, you know, like how we are going to kind of help them transition. Maybe one class during the week is like in, you know, actuality so that they can actually prepare things that they can take home to build together. On the other hand, like drawing and design can be quite seamlessly done on online, except for live drawing, you know, because you need to have a model and how, you know, we have certain criteria where the model has to be, you know, provided with certain comforts and all. And so how do you do that? And that's going to be challenging because next fall I'm going to be teaching a life drawing class. And, you know, so we are still trying to figure that out. But I think there are challenges, but they're exciting challenges, I would say, because it's kind of teaching us to be really in the 21st century now.
Yeah.
Previously, we were still operating on the 20th century kind of style a little bit. And so.
But in a way, when it comes to art, and you point that out when you're talking about 3D types of things, so we're talking about, for people maybe not familiar, like welding class or printing class, I mean, things where you physically have to do the project. You can't just, well, you can watch a lot of videos, but there's a difference between watching a video and actually doing it and finding that space for students and still being able to incorporate that one-on-one experience for them.
Yeah, you know, like it's imagining you can't do, very few of us could have a studio that could incorporate a glass blowing operation just because of the expense and the size of what you have to have and that you have to keep the glass molten forever. You know, I mean, I had an artist friend who actually did that, but he gave it up doing it there and went back to the university to do it because he had to keep that kiln running all the time or he would waste all that glass. And so it was a big problem.
Ceramics has maybe been the biggest challenge for us because most areas, including ceramics, have become much more multidisciplinary, more cross-disciplinary.
Right.
And, but ceramics is still sort of based largely in that practice with that material. And we used wheel throwing classes as sort of the litmus test for what we thought could work and couldn't, because you need the clay, you need the wheel, you need to be right there. When you're learning, you need a lot of instruction. So I will say in the spring, we continued those class meetings with those students because we realized, the faculty teaching those classes realized they were an important tether for those students. And we came to realize that the students were important tethers for those faculty members too. But just to have that as a way to move through the semester. But as we look at the fall, we have a small number of true face-to-face classes. The vast majority of our classes will be a hybrid where part of the time will be face-to-face, part of it will be outside of class. So online versus on campus, and other classes that'll be largely online. Although we still put a lot of value in that face-to-face experience of being in the school. And there is something very important about the tip of your fingers making contact with those materials or those surfaces or engaged in that process that you can't simulate. So our hope is that in the fall, we'll be able to do a good portion of the semester in face-to-face. We have decided after November 20th that there'll be no face-to-face on campus as we move into the flu season. But part of that, we would like to have 13 weeks of active face-to-face work everywhere we can, but adhering to safe social distancing practices and really thinking about how we can use the online resources to bring extra value to the experience of the students. Again, not just a stopgap, but really looking at how this technology allows us to be together kind of regardless of where we are in the world.
Because there is that real emotional connection, especially when it comes to students who are studying art and design. It's a different type of person that decides to choose that as their career and as their life. And you can't really put them in the same bag as you could put in kids that are studying accounting or something like that. Have you realized that there are maybe some classes that you're not going to be able to offer because of thing, you will have to think more about the online offerings?
We had thought about classes, excuse me, that we might wait and run in the spring rather than the fall, but there's so many variables right now that we don't know that we thought it would make more sense to move forward wisely, optimistically, but as wise as we can. But we've also been planning for what do we do if we find that we're not allowed to return to campus, and if that happens the week before classes start or the week after classes start, et cetera. And so we plan for that. There may be some changes we would make midstream that would help us navigate that in some classrooms. But again, most classes have the ability to really focus on the idea of the arts, and the process is hugely important, like teaching those 3D areas, and really value those experiences. But ultimately, the work ends up being about the ideas that you're trying to work with. And there are lots of ways to do that. We found this spring that just looking around your kitchen, you could find the materials to develop a sculpture, or going through your backyard, we could help students find pigments to do paintings with. And it was a challenge, but I also think we found ways to be creative in the solutions. And I think right now what we're asking the students to do is to be creative, and this demands that of them. So I think it's, in some ways, is a good challenge. This is something they'll never forget if they stay engaged. And I really feel like this is the most important moment to be engaged if you're a student. The world has already changed, and it's going to continue to change. You can't step back and not engage this. This is the moment to be engaged, to be part of that conversation, and to work together to figure out how we navigate this.
Anella?
I love it that Greg is so positive. It's just amazing.
He's the leader.
I really appreciate that because, I think that some of the students towards the end of the semester in the spring were like, I'm feeling very isolated, I'm feeling very sad and, sorrowful or depressed. A lot of them wouldn't get out of bed. They would position their cameras on them while they were laying down. And that was sort of like, maybe if this is going to go on long enough, then we may need to set some etiquettes, like how to conduct a class, and rather than let them be in their, party downstairs, or how do they say it? Like clothing upstairs and
business upstairs, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important point. I think laying down the idea that you prepare to come to class, whether it's virtual or in person, in the same way, or just like, putting on a new shirt or whatever and not staying in your pajamas. There's a lot of psychology to why that's important too, as a teacher.
Well, because back in the spring, it was so new. I didn't want to kind of talk about that to my students right at the start, because I felt like, they're kind of coming to grips with what's happening in the world right now. But I think for the fall and the spring, if this were to continue, I would kind of set that ground, grounding, saying, you come to school and you have to show up in your best, you put your best foot forward. And that also will, I hope, generate some kind of positive feeling, like you're accomplishing something rather than just, oh, I have to do this kind of thing. So I think that that's a very important element. And then I wanted to add something to what Greg was saying earlier. I worry about if we were to continue to do online classes and not have any on the ground classes, I worry that the students may not get the best understanding of materials. It's great that they are thinking outside the box and they're going to go find materials in their kitchen or their living room. That's great, or in the yard. But I worry that, how material can become such an integral part of the artwork, that may get reduced. And that's one of the challenges that I'm going to try to address in the fall, so that even if the students are not coming to class, they're at least getting that sensibility of like what material suits what purpose best.
So, yeah, I think that's really critical. Mm-hmm. I think also when you think about that importance, my background's in museum work and 3D, and it's really important what you can get that you can't get, even though it's video, it's 2D. And so the problem is you can't get a sense of some of the depth. It's still, the camera's only still simulating that. And so I was thinking about your drawing people. We may have to think of ways that they can have up models that they have at home, using somebody that's there to draw their arm or their hand, so that they're getting the full sense of something rather than having, a virtual model who's in 2D.
Or maybe just do self-portraits forever.
It's a whole new way to introduce the selfie, Anila. I think that's a good thing. We are speaking with Anila Aga right there. She's the Associate Professor of Drawing at Heron School of Art and Design. We're also joined by Greg Hall. He's the Interim Dean at Heron and a Professor in Sculpture. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be back with more of our Da Vinci Pursuit conversation.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor. Tune out all that noise and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
And welcome back. I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, and today we're talking about teaching art at the college level with Professor and Interim Dean Greg Hall and Professor and Artist Anila Aga. Welcome again.
Thank you.
And when we left for the break, it was really interesting. We had begun, I think, Anila, a really good conversation around, you know, what is lost. Even though we can get better at doing a lot of things, and there are advantages to having kind of what we've always wanted to do, a multi-approach to how we, you know, through our pedagogy as teachers or the techniques we use, we wanted to change. But there is something in the art that can be lost from not having the objects and the things that are there. You want to talk a little more about that, Anila?
Well, the second point that would go with material choices that I, you know, like what I introduced was the idea that material can be so integral to making the artwork. And if students are not getting a sense, a sensibility of what paper versus wood versus metal may behave like, particularly when you're trying to create something visceral or esoteric, or, you know, however you as the artist are making the work, and that can be lost when you're not able to utilize the materials the way we do in school with the skill-based approach, where we are also training the students to be technique-oriented, meaning they need to know how to, you know, use the saw, or they should be able to hang a painting, or, you know, stuff like that. So if you don't have the material availability, and then the second learning part, which is the technique or the process that you would use to create the work, that could also get lost. So I think that those two questions need to be, over time, need to be addressed by faculties around the country, because that is something that may train students to behave more like designers rather than fine artists. And that's my worry. I think what I want to do is to sort of figure out a way. I don't really have a very clear plan right now. But I want to be able to, you know, talk with the other faculty members on how we can address and what we can do to create that sense where maybe we can arrange for the students to come in once a week so that they can, you know, learn those skills, and then hopefully they have some way to go to either Rutgers or somewhere else where they can, you know, kind of use the machine that they need to do it. I wonder if that would actually happen. I don't know if the students would actually go somewhere else to do it when they have to pay versus school where they don't have to pay because they've already paid for it. So those are going to be some challenges that we're going to need to address. And exciting times, I would say.
I want to explore that point a little bit more, Aniela, as you brought that up, the difference between a student just being a designer and being a fine artist.
Right.
And before COVID, with both of you, because you've been, you know, teachers in art for majority of your life, have you seen more or less students going down that fine art path to learn the skills of focusing on being a fine artist, or just kind of veering off and using their art, but in other ways? It seemed like there was a time when there was a lot of people that really wanted to pursue fine art. They wanted to be an artist.
Well, I think that a lot of parents, older people, older generations, may think that their children need to have professions that will bring them a paycheck.
Uh-huh.
And generally, our society makes it difficult to realize that an artist is so multidimensional, is able to do so many different skills that they can kind of move between various platforms, meaning social platforms, but also skill-based platforms, and be able to create work across disciplines. Or find a job, because usually artists or people who are in the creative fields often are great problem solvers. Mm-hmm. And so they are able to translate whatever they've learned into other areas of work that our, you know, society expects. But it is an indisputable fact that artists get paid less. Often people will not pay them and offer them other things as a trade, like I'll publicize your artwork,
yeah,
versus actually giving them a paycheck. So I think as artists, we've always had challenges, you know, to survive, to be able to buy supplies, to be able to buy the machinery that we need and stuff like that. But then on the other hand, I think that making art, or, you know, the arts and humanities within our society are so important. And I think with this pandemic, we have realized how important they are, because everybody in this country and the rest of the world have been watching Netflix, have been watching movies.
I've been watching courses on painting, or
painting,
taking a tour of a gallery with a curator.
Exactly. And so it is so important that we elevate the arts to a higher level where people start paying them. And so then we will have more populations of students who would be interested. They already are interested. They would be able to pursue those fields.
Greg, do you think we went down, and I've wondered this myself, went down a little bit of a path in a higher ed that redefined higher ed as not being what Aniela was talking about, but becoming more that it was occupation oriented, that you're going to get paid more, you're going to get, which I don't think it ever was designed to be. I don't think the university was ever designed to be a pathway to more money, earnings, or jobs. And what do you think?
It's certainly an outcome that people want to measure, and it's certainly a conversation I have with parents before their students come. And that's sure. A voice that's in those students' ears, very loud and clear, particularly in their first years. But one of my fears about the pandemic was that I felt like we were at a really important and interesting moment when industry started to understand and value creativity and innovation. Became what they were looking for, and that is what we teach. And that's,
yeah,
universities provide that, but an art school, art or design side of the school, that's absolutely where they exist and focus. So I've been excited to see the fine arts and the design program working more together, some more classes that cross over, understanding that there's shared territory there. I know that in some of the applied arts, that in illustration or in design, in visual communication design, there may be a job waiting for you, but I, if I'm not mistaken, have 100% every student that graduates gets a job. And it may not be, you know, you open the want eds and you're not going to find poet or sculptor in there. But you know what? If you know how to look at, yes, at it, you really do. If you look at it, you understand exactly how the artist could fit in that and add real value. And I think that I'm hoping is going to be even more on the sort of something people are more aware of as we move through this moment, because this moment's so complicated. We need people that can come up with creative solutions and find ways to think laterally. And these are skills that we teach every day in the classroom. And so I think one more.
Go ahead, Nala.
As an sort of like an anecdote that happened to me in my life, this is about 20 years ago, maybe 21 years ago, I was working for a company called Levi Strauss in Pakistan, of all places.
We've heard of that.
And I remember, because everybody knew that I was an artist and I was working there as a you know, sort of like a designer. So I would get all the creative jobs because people just assumed that I would be able to do them well.
Right.
And it was true, like, I had such a diversity of different types of things that I could do that allowed me to continue to work there because, you know, it was a day job. I needed it desperately. So, you know, it worked out. But I was also able to use my creativity to reduce my workload, you know, because it's not just that you're in the creative fields and you're good at painting pictures, but I think you're creative in other ways where you make a dollar run longer than most other people do. You can make a material sing or talk or, you know, do all sorts of dance. You can make a machine work better for you than most other people would be able to do. So our skill levels are so vast that I think that it's just unfortunate that, you know, the creative fields haven't been given that kind of, you know. And I think with this pandemic, maybe we can make it more obvious to people that, you know, when you come in, you get computer training, you get abilities to draw on the computer, you can do all sorts of design ideas, but you're also able to make work physically. And to have those two combined, analog and digital, kind of together, can be so amazing for people, for students, you know?
That's really true.
And very important. And Greg, and that is before the pandemic, as you mentioned, within the last couple of years, there really has been an effort at Heron to start collaborating and reaching out with other departments and other schools in those ways to cross, you know, cross share each other's talents. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that's a really, it's a very exciting thing, and it's good news for parents, it's good news for students, and it's good news for our world.
Mm-hmm. I really agree. I think it's an important direction, and the campus, I think, had been making great strides in doing that, where there was more interest in crossing those disciplinary boundaries, and it was becoming something bigger than just one faculty member from each school being willing to put in the extra time. People were seeing the value. So one of the fears was when things got complicated, people retreated to their school. You know, they got with their team to sort of face the problem. It took a minute for us to break those silos back down and start working as a campus. But I see that happening again. I see it happening in the field beyond education. I mean, when I'm working as an artist, if I'm working on public art, I'm working with an engineer and an architect and designers, city planners, with a wide variety of different people, and we have to work together. And so we have to find common language, and it exists. I think one of the things, though, that's really unique about bringing artists into that mix, it's not about us making the poster for them. It's the way that an artist can look at a problem from six different sides and bring every one of those different points of view to the table, rather than just a single point of view. And it's the ability of artists and designers to look beyond the bells and whistles, the sort of what we all take for granted about this technology or whatever we're working with, and can find the poetics kind of below the surface. And that's something that we do. I mean, that is very much part of our wheelhouse, then that's not something that happens in other parts of the university or in other fields.
No, and you know, one of the critical things that you're both talking about, what is that idea that you have, creativity is something that allows you to abandon something and take on another thing. And Anila, you were talking a lot about those kinds of hidden skills. You know, they think that it's that you draw or you can sculpt, but honestly, it's the ability that not to lock on an idea forever. That's the real resilience that's built into your creativity. How do you find with your students that that goes with them once they do they apply it to other parts of their lives? What do they do with that?
By the time they are ready to graduate, if they haven't become jaded, tends to happen in colleges. But I think what happens is that they are able to start understanding how they can translate the knowledge to other fields of, you know, interest that they may have. But I there's an additional thing that we do that probably other, you know, professions don't do, and that is the critique space. Mm-hmm. You know, when we are dealing with and we come together and we exchange views and ideas and talk about what happened in the past and how this new work is going to do what it's going to do in the future. And that space, I doubt that other professions have to the level that we do. And, you know, I mean, like, yes, a medical student is going to work with a cadaver or is going to work in a lab or whatever, and they may have groups formed, but the way we critique and everybody participates is really different and such an important and integral part of our profession, I think.
Give us an example of that, Anila. Like, what happens during a critique?
Well, you know, I mean, like, if it's a drawing class and there are 20 students, they each one are going to put up a work that's going to be vastly different from the other person's. So there's a lot of interesting subjects to talk about for each person's work. And then when we are exchanging ideas, it's not like a debate. It's more of a sharing of information. It's not a question and answer kind of thing, but it's voluntary. Students learn public speaking. They learn how to formulate ideas and thoughts and put them in real words so that they gain confidence and they are able to then go in a different place and be able to publicly speak. I had a really interesting, another anecdote really, where I was talking to this professor and he was saying that their students participated in this competition where they were gonna make a sculpture for the outdoors. And his students somehow got to present, because when the other people were presenting, they weren't really being very legible. And his art students were able to formulate their ideas and explain from three different perspectives. And so they got the project, which is such an amazing thing to have, you know? I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars were given to those kids so that they could create a sculpture and build it up on the outside. And I think that that ability really gives you self-assurance and it gives you confidence in yourself.
So are those traits and those opportunities, are those being shared to like students in high school that are trying to think about what they want to do with their life, where they want to go to school? Because honestly, my first thought of learning all those skills wouldn't have been art school, but you get a lot more of that training in art school than you do in even as a journalism major.
I don't know. What do you think, Greg?
Well, I think we're fortunate. A lot of the high schools have faculty teaching art that are Heron graduates, and they very much can communicate that. Those art ed students were in studio classes with students that were studio majors. And so I think we're fortunate across the state to have that exchange happening. But I don't think you really understand it until you fully get into it. And the value of that, both learning the confidence, but also the self-criticism. And you are in the process of critique by nature is providing constructive criticism to another person and being able to navigate that when you hear it, but also being able to effectively provide it. I think it's a wonderful pedagogical method that I think other schools could employ, but it's complicated, and it means giving a lot of ownership of the moment to those individual students, which I think is phenomenal. I think that's an important vehicle. But I think that matches a lot of the teaching that happens within an art school. I think the pedagogical model is different anyway. When you take class X, you're not going to necessarily leave with this skill, and this skill. You're going to leave with a wide variety of things that you never anticipated because it's organic. It's happening in real time. And it's impacted by the people that are in the class with you. It's a learning community. It's very much teaching through that rather than just sort of checking boxes, which I think is a much more wonderful way to engage.
Well, and that makes it even more important for universities to do more of that cross sharing with, you know, the business students need to learn these skills. The medical students need to learn these skills.
So this goes back to
I think we need to create a pandemic of the arts.
Yeah, this goes back though to the original, you know, the original foundings of the university, which is a basic liberal arts education, right? And we moved so much to quickly specialize and get into a field that we're missing that one of the really great things about that is the interdisciplinary nature of taking things. And it always strikes me funny because sometimes I'll hear a certain dean, obviously not you, Greg, but somebody else pass down, you need to be more interdisciplinary. Without any, it's not easy to just do. In other words, it's a practice that becomes part of what you do. And I think artists maybe and art teachers can probably do it better. But I know in the School of Science, they try to work together, but it's really hard to move somebody who's been in one domain, one language, one way of communicating over to another.
It makes great sense.
I think also like in the medical field, I'm so sorry, Greg. Do you
want to go ahead. Please go ahead.
In the medical field, I think, I wonder, because I don't know since I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but sometimes I wonder if they actually learn everything by heart, or do they actually allow their students to sort of be creative while they're doing it? I don't know if that is part and parcel of that education, but it's definitely part and parcel of our education system where we train them to, you know, sort of do both, like learn as well as participate, as well as have the skills and be able to critique. So it's sort of like a very, you know, circuitous kind of way to teach a student. So if you do a 360 turn, you can do and be able to understand everything that you are looking at or find ways to be able to understand. Sometimes I think like we also train them to do research. So that research is also such an important element because, you know, you when you are critiquing something, you're kind of making a statement that can be refuted. So what's your basis? You have to have enough research so you can say that this is, you know, something important. And research becomes very integral to the critique as well, I think.
Greg?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting common ground, excuse me, with the rest of the campus. In collaborations I've had with colleagues in medical fields, creativity has still been the place where we overlap, the space where we can truly collaborate. So I think it probably varies, but I think anytime you fully immerse yourself in learning something, you're going to cross those different thresholds when things begin to reveal themselves. It wouldn't be available unless you dug deep enough. I think everything in a way relates to jazz. It's like if you can just climb into it far enough, it will reveal the most amazing secrets to you. I remember really clearly as a student one evening drawing in a studio and then leaving and it was dusk and I walked outside and everything I looked at, I could understand exactly how to draw it. And I had sort of crossed this threshold. I can remember welding and been welding for years. And suddenly I saw closer than I ever had, was able to sort of do something at a much higher level just because I was that focused. And I think that happens in most fields. I think as I collaborate with people from different backgrounds, I'm amazed that they don't realize that they're artists too, but they don't have as many outlets. And so it's to their advantage to collaborate with us as well.
I think they call it the flow. don't they? In the science world, because I attended a neuroscience conference a couple of years ago.
Moderated by
Jing. Yeah. She brought that conference to IUPUI, and I was able to attend it. And it was really exciting to realize some of the things that we do so naturally for ourselves, you know, as artists and designers. And here, a scientist is talking about this. And it's like, oh my God, this is exactly how I behave. You know, once I get a process really learned by heart, then I can kind of just go in flow and forget about eating or drinking or whatever, you know. So I think that moment in time is really important.
I know we do it, Da Vinci Pursuit, because that's kind of what we're all about, is bringing the art and science together. We're going to take another short break here. We've been speaking with Anila Aga and Greg Hall, and we want to remind you that this program is made possible by the generosity of an anonymous donor who supports the Da Vinci Pursuit's mission, which is creating a museum without walls so that artists, scientists, and you, the community, can all come together for unique activities and conversations. And we will continue ours in just a minute.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Dave Bagdad, host of The Kitchen Party Kaylee. I hope you'll join me every Sunday at 10 p.m. for the best music from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and the U.S. The Kitchen Party Kaylee, Celtic music from across the globe and across town.
This is Jürgen Jungbauer from the Heidelberg House on Pendleton Pike here in Indianapolis. Join me this Sunday for German Music Hour. And even if you don't speak the language, I hope you enjoy the music and the rhythm and the beat on this radio station every Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's only here on 88.7 WICR.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor, tune out all that noise, and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Hi, this is Tony Morris. Join me for an hour of some of the best music for guitar on Classical Guitar Alive. Each week we explore a wide variety of music with guitar, and you'll also hear interviews with many of the world's foremost performers and composers. That's each week on Classical Guitar Alive.
Saturday mornings at 5 on WICR, The Diamond.
Welcome back. This is a conversation about art and science with Greg Hull, interim dean and professor of sculpture at the Heron School of Art and Design, and Anila Aga as associate professor of drawing and an internationally known artist. And as I bring us back in, one of the questions that popped out earlier for me is that we have an opportunity to do something we've always wanted to do in higher ed, and that is, it's giving us a new opportunity through COVID and the way we're doing things to be more inclusive. And you know, that's been like dragging something up the hill to get professors to move to there. But when you had to go online and you have to change your course to adapt to new ways, I think that the greater word of inclusion comes in. How do you think that plays in your work?
So I think with inclusion comes access, and that was the first hurdle we had to clear, that we were trying to be more inclusive. Not everyone had access, and that's part of a bigger conversation that is important right now as well, that I think is important and timely. I agree. I think we've found a way to provide things where it may be more accessible, but we have to make sure that everybody has even access to that, to that starting point. But I do think that's true, and I think it's true on a global level. I mean, we're actually, one of the big fears with the pandemic is that we will do what I talked about the schools on campus doing. We will become more nationalistic, that we won't be as inclined to move across the planet. And I think now more than ever is the time to reach out and to be more internationally engaged. And the moment is perfect to sort of look for those opportunities to include voices beyond our borders in these conversations.
So yeah, it's interesting. We've done a couple of, with the Venture Pursuit, a couple of, like we had a watercolor class with Megan, who's here in town, one of our artists, and it was wonderful, but we were capturing people from all over the world. And we wouldn't have that. We wouldn't have that happen, and in different time zones and different languages. And so I think you're right. I mean, it's a really much broader sense. Anila, what were you thinking? With
my husband's here. He's distracting me.
That's cute.
I didn't hear you. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Do you want to start over or?
No, we're good.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell you, go away.
But I was talking about that you are able to capture people from all over. I know that many professors that I've talked to have had to learn, honestly, things that they didn't worry about before, like captioning just a picture that they put in their Zoom thing, that before they would do a lecture and it'd be presented on PowerPoint, they didn't have to worry about it because they were there. But with screen readers and other stuff, they're having to learn to be different.
Yeah. You know, I don't teach art history, thankfully, because I don't remember dates. But I think that is something that could become like a sticky issue, because you have to give credit to the right person or caption it accordingly. So, you know, to tell you honestly, I haven't had a situation this past semester where we were actually doing that, because there was, over the last 15 years, I've been taking photographs of the student work. So I'm able to show them the past students' works so that they understand what the project is all about and stuff like that. But going forward, I think that I would definitely pay more attention to who gets credit for the work. And like I can tell them this is, and even on the PowerPoints, I do have their names, but like if you're just showing a single photograph versus a presentation, that's something to think about. And then one other thing I'd like to add is that, one of my art colleagues from Chicago did this thing where he was inviting people from around the world to participate in like an art discussion about art fairs, about different kind of, art writing, stuff like that. And what I thought was interesting that he was able to bring people from, I think one was from Norway, another one was from Bangladesh, another one was from Sri Lanka, and then the rest of us were from the US. The only problem with a situation like that, when you have a meeting and the moderator is not moderating correctly, then it becomes like a big noise and nobody hears anybody. So that's another thing that we would have to learn, how to manage a class, online, where everybody gets to have a say. And then the other learning that I did this past semester was that we would go over time totally all the time. It was like, the critique for the final, like we would finish 20 people physically in class, but on Zoom, it would just take so long because everybody was talking and, passing their comments. So we need to become more efficient on how we are going to manage the online classes in that way, time-wise. And I wasn't good at that this past semester, because then I had to divide up the students and half and say, we'll do a critique next week with this person, these, seven people, and then the rest of them are going to do it on this day.
Greg, you were going to jump in with something right there.
You answered my question. I think there's more than one solution. Sometimes critiques don't need to be more efficient. You just need more than one day. I think we learned a lot in the spring. We're going to learn a lot in the fall. I think I wouldn't have it any other way. I think a school is meant to be a school at every level, for the faculty, the students, and the staff. We're all there to learn. We all should come to work every day to learn how to do what we do better. And that makes it interesting. That makes it engaging.
And along those lines of inclusion, before COVID kind of happened too, Heron, you guys had really started branching out, bringing artists from other countries and such to come and spend time with the students and to share their skills and their culture with them. And teaching artists at Heron, I know, Anila, you were involved with one of the Arts for Learning project, which brought your experience and your art into elementary schools. So there's different ways of using that inclusion kind of thing that I hope we can continue.
Yeah,
the best thing I got from Arts for Learning, there was this young girl, like maybe 6 years old, who somehow attached herself to me. And I think that she had decided that she was going to be an artist, and she would stay 6 feet away from me. Wherever I would go, she would follow me. And that was like a really lovely thing. There were other young girls who were interested, but you know, the kind of ownership that she took, and then she started answering for me in some cases, which was really delightful, because I thought, oh my God, this girl is gonna be an artist because she's already decided. But it's also because I was a role model for her. She was mixed race, and so she kind of gravitated towards me, and that kind of inclusion physically, I don't know if we can make that happen online. I hope we can. We can introduce people from other places, but you know, the physical warmth, I do miss that.
I do think that both of you are right. I think there's also gonna be a shift in slowly, but in how we view full-time faculty versus part-time. I know a lot of places have laid off all of their adjuncts, which is a bad news, because that's where your diversity was and your in both thought and but in things. And so we're gonna have to rethink our models, but I think this is forcing the university to have to rethink that model in a good way, and say, can't we have, like you were saying, can't we have different mentors? We don't have to employ full time to be part of that, but who can come in and provide an insight from another country or another location or another thought? And I think that's really critical to what you're saying.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we are almost out of time here.
We are.
And that's like a whole nother great conversation that we won't want to have. But we do want to thank both of you for joining us. Greg Hall, the Interim Dean and Professor of Sculpture at Heron School of Art and Design, and Anila Aga, the Associate Professor of Drawing and also a very well-known artist. Thank you for being with us, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you. And you'll find pictures of the guests that we've had and some of their work on the DaVinciPursuit.com, where we create museums without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can come together to enjoy unique activities and conversations.
And until next time, I am Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to stay curious.
Thank you for listening to She Says Art and He Says Science. You can listen to the full show podcast on WICRonline.org, as well as on the DaVinciPursuit.com. Or you can join your hosts, Jill Dittmeyer and Mark Kiesling, here every Saturday at 1 p.m. on a different kind of public radio, 88.7 WICR.